Time for the Game Plan with Anthony Seibold.
The morning show Game Plan with Seibs is always a good one. Plenty to dive into. G'day, Seibs.
Morning, Matty.
Wow, there's a fair bit for us to talk about. So, obviously, as a man who's coached at the highest level in this game at the NRL, you're well and truly aware with how the press conference scenario plays out. I just want your thoughts, first of all, on the unprecedented one-week ban. It doesn't sound like a lot, but you're taking a head coach out of action completely for 1 week, plus $25,000 out of the skyrocket. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, you know, some people have said it's a heavy price to pay, and others have said that potentially it's too lenient. Look, I think in some ways the NRL have got this right. I think you know, the way listening to Don Ferner speak on behalf of the Raiders yesterday, they were comfortable with taking on any sanctions from the NRL. You know, Ricky Stewart's come out and apologised, but I've also got great empathy for the situation as well. It's you know, Jamin Salmon and his family would be, you know, obviously quite hurt with the comments, but also from what I understand, there's a historical sort of situation there that Ricky commented on. And one thing I do know is you are quite emotional at the end of a game, particularly when you lose and your side doesn't perform great. So, you know, going into the press conference, in a lot of ways, you don't have or you haven't had time to really collect your thoughts, because it is, for people, you know, listening, you don't get a lot of time between the end of the game, talking to your team, and pretty much you're straight out the door to the press conference. So it is quite soon after a game. So there's a lot of emotions involved.
Yeah, and I think everyone understands that, Seibs, but I guess the point of difference about this one is that it was a publicly NRL-sanctioned forum, essentially, and Ricky's there as the head coach representing both his club and essentially, in some ways, the game. So there was something very personal here that came out that normally wouldn't come out in that scenario. But take us a step back. You finish your game, you get to the press conference. Do you have any time to say, and this is completely separate to what Ricky would have gone through with Elliot Whitehead sitting there, but do you have any time to say to your captain, okay, we're going to try and get this message across, or is there any planning that you can do going into that situation?
Not a lot, to be fair, Matty. What happens is the media manager of your club will come and grab you, and often he'll give you maybe a heads up on potential questions that the media might ask. And you generally do that walking down the hallway, you know, from the change room to where the media conference is. So there's not a lot of time. Often it's only sort of 1 or 2 minutes. And in my experience, at both South Sydney and the Broncos, the media manager would potentially, you know, give me some topics, essentially, you know, of what, you know, the journalist would be asking. So there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of time. And you certainly don't get time to brief your captain. He's just listening like yourself. And, you know, the media manager's in the room, but, you know, as I said, emotions are mixed at times, particularly if you've lost a game or you've lost a couple on the trot or you've lost a really big game or an important game. So, yeah, it's quite challenging for the coaches, but I also understand that you need to work within NRL guidelines and, you know, public commentary like that. You know, they've seen fit to sanction that.
In terms of the 1 week penalty in particular, I was told ages ago when, you know, there were some players who were constantly doing the wrong thing, and somebody said to me, you know, fines are fines are fines, but you got to take the thing off them that matters the most. And in a player's position, take the jersey away from them, take the ability for them to play. And that's why we see players suspended, and that hurts. But we're now seeing a coach suspended. So talk to me what you think that effect has on. To the layman, 1 week doesn't sound like much. But for somebody like Ricky, somebody like yourself, to have no contact whatsoever with your football team for a week, is that the thing that's going to hurt the most?
There's no doubt about that. That's what will, you know, be hurting Ricky. You know, he's obviously a very proud coach who's coached a whole heap of games at four different NRL clubs now. And, you know, not being able to go and spend the week preparing, you know, the playing group would be, you know, really challenging for him, I would have thought. Now, the thing is, they've got assistant coaches there like Andrew McFadden, Brett White. Those types of guys will take the reins this week. But, you know, not having contact with the playing group, the senior players and, you know, the coaching staff that you work very closely with every single day, Matty, will you know, certainly hurt Ricky. And my way of thinking, that probably hurts more than, well, you know, I would expect that would hurt more than the fine itself.
Well, a lot of people say that Ricky, you know, and they've have the number of the amount of dollars he's been fined over the course of his career. And that's part of the allure of Ricky, isn't it? We love the fact that he wears his heart on his sleeve. But a lot of people are saying that those numbers, those penalties haven't been a deterrent for somebody like Ricky. So if you come out and say this, you instantly know that you shouldn't have said it in that forum. Perhaps he's not going to back away from what he said, but in that forum, do you think then with the one-match ban that would deter somebody like Ricky from doing that again, and that would put other coaches on notice not to cross the line that the NRL sees is a line?
Well, I think this will act as a deterrent, particularly talking or criticising players or public figures within the game. Publicly, I think it will be a deterrent. I don't think you can group the other fines that Ricky's had to pay or other coaches have had to pay and group it in with this one. I think this is a little bit different. You know, often in the past, there's been criticism of referees or decisions, from officials within the game. This isn't grouped in with that. So, look, I think the NRL have got it right in some ways. I think, Ricky and also the Canberra Raiders have showed some contrition. And I think, it's been a talking point for a few days and probably will be, particularly with the importance of the Canberra Raiders game this weekend. You know, they're still fighting away for that eighth position in the playoffs. And I think that's what will hurt Ricky Stewart the most, that he won't be there with the playing group preparing during the week and, working closely with his staff as well. And that'll probably hurt.
I'm trying to think, Siebs, did you cop a fine? Did you cop a big one in your time at South or the Bronx?
No, I didn't. No, thankfully.
You're a goody two-shoes.
Yeah, no, I got frustrated a few times, Matty, but no, I didn't. Look, as I said, emotions take over at times, particularly straight after a game and particularly when, we all know this, like the post-match press conferences, journalists are trying to do is get a bit of a grab or trying to get a headline so people read articles or listen. And that's their role. The role of the coach is to prepare the group and help the group perform as best as possible or give them the opportunity to perform as best as possible. Now, when that doesn't work out after a game, Matty, you'd understand or appreciate that. Yeah, that's frustrating because your whole week's work goes into that game, that 80 minutes. And so when you lose or when you lose by a tough decision, like the West Tigers a few weeks ago, I won't say the weeks are waste, but you've invested so much time, so many hours, into that particular preparation. So that's where the frustration comes at different times. And, I didn't get fined, but, certainly frustrated at different times.
Just a final one on this whole scenario. I guess it does call into question the press conference situation and the way that the media is then put in front. And I think it has to be a two-way street. There has to be some dialogue at the end of a game from coach and captain to the media, that otherwise you're just shutting the door on everything. So we need that. I was around in the time where you used to be able to go into the dressing rooms and handpick as much as you could, and you know that very well. Do you reckon, and we don't know, we can't speak for Ricky, but do you think that perhaps that, I mean, would this have happened if journos were still floating around the dressing rooms trying to get a quote anyway? Do you reckon that perhaps the environment might have change something different? Do we need to look at a different environment for coaches and captains sitting in front of the media, or do we just say it's working now and this is something out of the ordinary?
I think it's working now and this is something out of the ordinary, but I did like the days when the journalists would come into the locker room and grab a player or two, or speak to the assistant coach or the head coach or whatever it was. I did like that. I think it seems very clinical. The press conferences seem very clinical, so to speak. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you're behind a desk and it's very formal post-game. Is there another way to do it? I'm not too sure. I think it probably fits what media organisations want, and probably from a club perspective fits what most clubs would want. But I still think there's a role in the game for that personal nature of journalists coming into the change rooms after a game, win or lose, grabbing some players for an interview, or even, as I said before, grabbing the coach for an interview. I did like that. I think it was probably a little bit more personal. But I still think there needs to be that sort of formal press conference. And, the timing's probably a bit of an issue because at times you don't get to enjoy the win and you certainly still carry some frustration if you lose.
And then off the back of that, the timing is, the media needs it straight away. Pronto.
That's right. Yeah.
And perhaps we don't get that emotion if we don't get in there straight away. Isaiah Papali'i, now I'm going to put you in the shoes of Tim Sheens here, and you're sitting there and Benji Marshall, and you're thinking, okay, we've got a player who's signed who now has second thoughts about it. He's not going to be the last, and he's certainly not the first to do that as a deal gets closer, especially with the changing situation with Michael Maguire. So what are you thinking now as a head coach if you've got Isaiah Papali'i on the books, ready to go, but has second doubts? Do you want him? And if so, do you still want him? How do you make sure then that he's going to be comfortable coming over?
Well, either way, Matt, I think there needs to be a resolution. I did hear the comments yesterday and that a decision will be made in the off season, but that doesn't help either the player, in my opinion, or the club, or the prospective clubs that he's also talking to, whether that's Parramatta or the Warriors, which has been reported. Because, you know, West Tigers have gone out and specifically recruited an edge back rower. And because they made that decision, they let Leilua go to the Cowboys early. And they also let Tuolungi go to Manly for next year. Garner go to Penrith for next year. So three of their back rowers who have played this year, they've let go because they've signed, Isaiah Papali'i from the Parramatta Eels. So they've made a decision around that. And if he's going to pull out or the West Tigers no longer want him, if that's the conversation, then I think there needs to be a resolution sooner rather than later, because once it gets to the off-season, like how many quality players are there going to be available? There won't be. So West Tigers need to bring this to a head at some stage. Look, I think Tim Sheens would be disappointed if he doesn't come, because he's a very good player. And I think the improvement that he's shown at Parramatta over the last season and a half, or almost two seasons now, has been immense. Like, he came out of the New Zealand Warriors as a player who'd been a little bit inconsistent, but he's been really consistent. So he's a quality player. But I do think they need to bring it to a head so both parties can move on.
Yeah, the old cold feet syndrome, isn't it? You know, the closer the deal gets to being absolutely enacted, I mean, it's already been rubber stamped, but the closer it gets, then obviously some people just have that, oh, perhaps I'm starting to get a little bit nervous here. And you mentioned Luciano Leilua. I heard him being interviewed on this network a couple of weeks back, and he's so comfortable now up there at the Cowboys. He admitted he was nervous going through with that, but now he's just so happy. Obviously, they're playing good footy. So perhaps Isaiah Papali'i can look across there and say, well, it might not have been everything that I thought it was going to be. There's no Michael Maguire there, and the Tigers are struggling, but perhaps things might change when I get there and I might be comfortable. So we'll see how that one pans out. But is it frustrating, do you think, with the current contract system that players can sign a year in advance or even a couple of years in advance?
Oh, look, it's a really tricky one, and it'd be hypocritical of me to make comment on that matter. You know, at the end of 2018 postseason, you know, I agreed a contract at the Broncos for a 6-year deal. So it'd be very hypocritical of me to make comment on the players and their families. What I do know is you make a decision what you think's right for your family. And for some people, it's life-changing, right? Now, I don't know the specifics around Papali'i or why he signed in advance. Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's for personal reasons or family reasons. And we don't know that. There's a lot that goes on behind doors that we don't know about. But look, it's not ideal, but that's they're the rules. You know, so the players or the clubs haven't done anything illegal in going through that process. It's where it is. I've heard, and we should go to trade windows similar to some of the other international sports, and have windows where players can change clubs or sign with other clubs. I'm not sure what the right thing to do is. I just know it is probably awkward for supporters to see players and or coaches, sign in advance. It's not ideal. There's no doubt about that.
We are doing the game plan with Anthony Seibold. After the news, we'll talk top eight. Cameron Munster, he's moved back to 5'8", and we'll get your top tactical plays from round 21 and your tips from round 22 as well. 0457 736 736 is the text line. If you've got a question for Seibs, or give us a call, 1300 01 1170. Thank you, Vanessa. Coming up this morning, I'll catch up with Max King from the Bulldogs. So the Doggies have had the world's longest trip to get over to Auckland to play the Warriors at Mount Smart Stadium. They went from Bundaberg back to Brisbane over to Auckland. I think they arrived at about 3 a.m. in the morning. You're going to find out, too, who is the daggiest traveller out of the Bulldogs lineup. If you can have a guess at that, let me know. Dane Rampey from the Sydney Swans will join us as well, the co-captain of the Swans, after Josh Kennedy announced that he'll be retiring at the end of the season. A very emotional day at the Swans yesterday. Looking forward to Dane And Bathurst winner Lee Holdsworth will join me a little bit later on in the program. We can talk supercars and also a great cause that Lee's getting behind as an ambassador, Kidney Health Australia's kids and youth program. So we'll tell you all about that. But we're doing the game plan with Anthony Seibold. Want to talk footy as it stands, Seibs. The Panthers have a 6-point lead now, as we know, at the top of the ladder. We're getting to the crunch end. Tried to do this yesterday with Tommy to work out, is the eight set now? And if not, who goes out and who comes in? Your thoughts on the top eight?
Yeah, look, Canberra Raiders and Manly are still two teams who have some, you know, possibility in making the eight. I just think the way that the Roosters performed on the weekend, they've nailed a spot there now. They've played really good football over the last 3 weeks. So I think they've got their spot. You know, South Sydney have got a pretty challenging draw, but they've sort of got themselves in sixth position at the moment. So, look, I think it stays as it is. There's a couple of tough run times, particularly South Sydney's run is quite challenging. But I think they've got enough talent and ability to get a couple of wins out of the last four games. So, I see that the top eight not changing. And, but obviously Canberra and Manly would still see themselves as some mathematical chance.
What do you reckon the number is? What's the magic number to make sure you're in the top eight? Is it, I mean, it's always around that 26 competition point mark. Would you still see that as the cutoff?
Yeah, traditionally that's what it's been. You know, essentially winning 50% of your games, right? So, and then you get 2 points for a bye. So that's roughly where it's been. Maybe need 28 this year, but yeah, it's. The good thing is that there's still 10 teams in contention. I think that's a real priority for the NRL to have a competitive competition where you're going into the last month and the top eight's not decided, because there's been some years where it has been decided. So, yeah, Manly, Raiders, still a mathematical chance. The Dragons, loss against the Cronulla Sharks probably sees them drop off the race there. So that's what the NRL would be happy with, 10 teams still competing.
So if the eight stays the same, Seibs, and the Panthers obviously clear favourites to win the premiership again, who's the team most likely to challenge them? Because it's interesting, isn't it? There's a couple of standout contenders who are on the charge. There's a couple of smokies down the back end of the top eight who are on the charge. Do you consider that you have to be in the top four to win the title? And who do you think challenges Penrith?
I do think you need to be in the top four. Yeah, I do think. And I think historically we've seen that. It's really challenging to win three games in a row to get yourself into the grand final because of the nature of the the high skill level of teams and so on. So it's really tough to win those three in a row. Look, I still see Melbourne as a potential grand finalist. I think I think just their big match experience. You know, Cameron Munster plays fullback on the weekend, scores three tries. When Bromwich and Nelson Asofa-Solomona are on the park going forward, Felice Kaufusi, who's had a terrible loss with his dad passing away last week, he'll come back into the team as well. I just think they've got big match experience that can challenge Penrith on the biggest of days. The other team is the Cowboys. Look, watching them live a couple of weeks ago, I just couldn't believe of their effort and their work off the ball. We see a very skillful team there at the moment, but it's actually what they're doing off the ball that really, really impressed me, which makes me think, again, they can challenge there. So those three teams, I think, two of those will be playing against each other on grand final night.
Yeah, you and I are going to be out there at the SCG on Saturday with Timmy Manor for the Roosters v Cowboys, and that's going to be a crackerjack. And that may answer so many questions on so many different sides of the equation. Looking forward to that one. And you mentioned Cameron Munster, so goes back to the number 6 jersey for this match against the Panthers. Cooper Johns at halfback. Nick Meaney, who's a rock-solid performer, slots into fullback. So do you think that's the way it's going to play out? Do you think that Craig Bellamy is going to sit with Cam Munster now at number 6 for the rest of the season, if he can?
Well, I think if Jerome Hughes was available this week, Cameron would have still stayed at fullback. That's what I would think. I thought he was outstanding last week, and we'll talk about the top tactics later, but just the way that he, threatened on both sides of the field was outstanding. But, I think for the moment, Cameron Munster in the halves with Cooper Johns, you know, to help Cooper get the team around the park. You know, Cooper will play on the right, Cameron will play on the left, and Nick Meaney's rock solid. He can also play in the wings. So that's why I thought if Jerome Hughes come back after last week, they might have persisted with Cooper in the halves there with Jerome and kept Cameron at the back and bring Nick Meaney back through the wing, which he's played a whole heap for the Canterbury Bulldogs in his career there. So, but I just love what Munster brings. He's a big game player. and he can play any position. He used to play, when he first started, Matt, he was playing centre for the Storm. In the reserve grade at Brisbane East, and just absolutely killing it because we were trying to create a position for him to come to the team, because at the time we had Blake Green in the halves and we had Billy Slater in the halves. So we were trying to get Cameron Munster to be a left centre, and he was outstanding, just tearing up the competition, and then Billy got injured. But he's a super talented player.
No doubt about that. We're going to get to your top tactics very soon and your final tips too for round 22. 1300 01 1170. Gary's on the line, wants to speak to you about your time with the Bunnies. Go ahead, Gary. Siebes is here.
Right, Anthony, just semi-final time when the Bunnies scored all those tries during the year, and they scored more tries than anyone else in 100-odd years of playing rugby league. But come semi-final time, we played the Dragons. I think we scored one try and won 13-12. And then we went to the Roosters, and then we scored no tries. What was your thought process on how did all that happen when we're scoring so many tries and we couldn't score any tries semi-final time? What did you learn from that?
Oh, there was probably a couple of things. I think if you you may remember the very first semi-final down in Melbourne, and they beat us 29-28. Cameron Munster kicked a field goal with about 2.5-3 minutes to go. That was one of the most exciting semi-finals that we've probably seen for a couple of years there at the stage. And attacking-wise, we were humming. I think the next week, you've got to give some credit to the Dragons and also the Roosters. I mean, the Roosters were the best defensive side that year, and they did. They nullified us. I think their line speed in particular really disrupted us there at the Sydney Football Stadium. And I think the Dragons game, I think there was a little bit of anxiety. The way that we played that night, we were quite clunky because we'd been, as you said, we'd been really free-flowing from attacking point of view and scored the most points that year. And I just thought we'd play with a little bit of anxiety. We were a little bit off with regards to our lines and our tempo with which we played an attack. And I just think you've got to give credit to the Roosters side the following week. They really disrupted us with the line speed, and they had a whole heap of possession. And where they were handing over the ball, we were pretty much coming off our own line. And we got some opportunities in the second half, and we just weren't good enough to take them on the night. But, lessons we learn. You've got to have a plan B, don't you? You've got to have a plan C sometimes. So I reckon that's where the growth would have been if I had to coach South Sydney again the next year.
Good on you, Gary. Appreciate your call. On the text line, Sam's got a question for you, Siebes. Who do you think is the best replacement for Craig Bellamy when he decides to retire?
Probably two people. Billy Slater, who's obviously had a really good start with the Queensland Origin team. He works with the ball players and the fullbacks down there at the Storm. I think if he wants to be a coach, he can go down that route. The other person is a guy called Mark Brentnell. Mark Brentnell, he's very unheralded. He's one of the best assistant coaches I've seen. He's been in the Storm system since the end of 2012. He looks after their attack there. He's an ex-school teacher. He's very, very good coach. But whoever it is, I think they need somebody who, whether it's Billy, Mark Brentnell or somebody else, I think they need to have the Storm DNA. They need to have worked with Craig Bellamy or played under Craig Bellamy there, in my opinion. And they need to keep Frank Panisi around, whoever takes over. So the general manager of football, they are super crucial, super important to a head coach. So I think it needs to be someone who's worked at the Storm, and those two guys I nominate I think would be front runners. But I do think they need to keep Frank Panisi around as well. And if you can get Craig Bellamy as a mentor or something like that, that'd be the best thing to do.
Yeah, consistency and familiarity, especially in that system that they've created down there. You're 100% right. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Billy Ake decides that it is time to go. All right, before round 22 tips, let's reflect on round 21 and your top tactical plays out of the round just gone.
Yeah, so I was going to start with the Panthers versus Canberra game. And the thing that I saw was when James Fisher-Harris got Simbin, during that game, one of the things that we saw Dylan Edwards do was his defensive line organisation was outstanding. But one of the things that he started to do was put himself in the line. Now, most fullbacks are doing that inside their 20-metre zone. What Dylan Edwards started to do was actually plug in the line a little bit further up the field. And by plugging in the line, it gives it gives that extra defender that you're missing in James Fisher-Harris. So when the attacking side look up, if they're not looking for the space in the backfield, they see 10 defenders set in the line with two markers, and it's a really thick line. I just thought the way they managed that, he painted a bit of a picture of a mirage there at times where he was sort of ghosting to come in the line, but he did an exceptional job. And I've got no doubt the Panthers would have practiced that, because the week before they were down to 12 men for the bulk of the game. And I think the improvement they had from the Parramatta game to the Raiders game was how they defended when they were down to 12 men, albeit only for 10 minutes. But I just thought they did a great job there.
He was brilliant, Dylan Edwards, his 100th game. So next tactical play?
Yeah, number two for me was Cameron Munster playing fullback for the Melbourne Storm. One of the things it did was it freed Cameron Munster to go on both sides of the field. So when he plays in the number six jersey, which he did the other day, but when he plays 5'8 for the Storm, he plays on the left side of the field. So he'll either play on a short side on the left-hand side in attack, or what he'll do is he'll be second receiver when they go to that left-hand side of the field. So he's almost like parked on the one side of the field. The thing that opened Cameron up the other day against the Gold Coast was his ability to be able to roam on both sides of the field and being actually an attacking player who's one hole out. So he's one defender out or two defenders out. So he's actually putting a lot more pressure on the last two defenders from an attacking point of view. I thought he was brilliant. You know, he started his first grade career playing as a fullback as a replacement for Billy Slater, and he just showed so much ability. I thought, you know, tactically they used him very well.
And number three?
Yeah, so was the Roosters. I just thought the Sydney Roosters, the first 20 minutes was perfect with regards to the intent that you want to start a game with. So their big men were running at inside shoulders of the Brisbane Broncos. The Broncos were coming off the line a little bit sideways, and they're getting back at inside shoulders, which was creating quick play the balls. The second thing they did exceptionally well was where they handed over the ball. They were suffocating the Broncos where they were giving Corey Oates, Tessie New, the ball. They were starting in corners, almost like coffin corner, where they suffocated him into a corner. So by tackle three or tackle four, the Broncos had hardly made any metres. I just thought the intent that they started the game from a tactical perspective, getting back at inside shoulders was outstanding, and it set up the game. Broncos, to their credit, sort of hung in, but I just thought the way that the Roosters started was outstanding.
Look out. Here come the Roosters. All right, your tips for this weekend. Let's start Thursday night, Bluebet Stadium, Panthers v Storm. A crackerjack way to start the round.
Yeah, what a game. I'm just going to lean on the Panthers. It's at home. They've only lost once there against the Parramatta Eels in a very long time, so I just think they'll be too strong there.
Over at Mount Smart Stadium, Warriors v Bulldogs. I'll be catching up with Max King soon.
Yeah, look, I'm going to go for the Bulldogs. Warriors will be much improved, as they have been in their first two games, but I just think the Bulldogs have got too many points in them at the moment for the New Zealand team.
Friday night at CommBank, the Eels have the Rabbitohs, 5th v 6th.
Yeah, what a game, Friday night footy. I think the Eels will win that game. It'll be a close game. I just think they've got some points in them, Parramatta, and I still got some question marks on the Rabbitohs' defence. They do leak some points at times against teams, and they've had some wins, 32-30 and so on, so I'm just going to go to the Parramatta team there.
We'll be there at the SCG on Saturday afternoon. Now, on paper, Roosters 8th, the Cowboys 2nd. However, Roosters, $1.65 favourites, $2.25 for the Cowboys. Who are you picking here at the SCG?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the home team. I think they've showed enough over the last 3 weeks to show that they're going to be a real contender. They probably left their run a little bit too late to get a top four position, but I'm going to see an upset there against the Cowboys, who have been really consistent for a fair while.
Saturday at 5:30, the Tigers and Sharks are out at Tamworth, Scully Park.
Yeah, that'll be great for the people out Tamworth way. I think the Sharks will be too strong. They've cemented themselves a position in the top four, and I think they'll have too much for the Tigers.
Yeah, they look too good, don't they? Suncorp Stadium, Saturday night, Broncos v Knights.
Yeah, look, Knights were a little bit better last week. It was good to see them get a win, knowing their coach well. I just see Broncos having too many points at home. I think after a couple of losses in a row, they'll come out and they'll be hard to handle.
All eyes will be on GIA Stadium on Sunday afternoon. So no prowling Ricky on the sideline here, but the Raiders, well, they need this one against the Dragons.
Yeah, they do. And I think they'll have... there's been a lot of commentary. We've spoken about that, but I think that they've got too much to play for. So I'm going to go with the Raiders there.
Okay, Raiders to win that one. And then Titans have the Seagulls at Seabus.
Yeah, look, it's a must-win for Manly. There's still a chance to make the playoffs. They've got a little bit of work to do after their last couple of losses. But I think they'll have too much for the Gold Coast, who have really struggled.
Good on you, Siebes. I'll see you at the SCG on Saturday.
Good on you, Matty. Thanks, mate. Good to chat.
The game plan there with Anthony Seibold. Let us know your thoughts, 0457 736 736, or give me a call. I can take your calls and texts after this.